Mr. Finchley Takes the Road by Victor Canning. Adapted for radio by Andy and Eric Merriman. Episode 4, in which Mr. Finchley is all at sea, discovers the dignity of labour, and visits an old haunt.
Whoa! I think we must have gone wrong somewhere. I'm sure this isn't the right way. Excuse me. Hello? Could you help?
Who, me? Yes? What is it?
I seem to have got a bit lost. Is that the sea over there?
Yes, it looks like it to me. And beyond that is the Isle of Sheppey.
Ah, thank you. So that's where I am. It's not near Faversham, is it?
Oh, no, you should have turned up a long time ago for Faversham.
Yes, I thought I should have done that.
Well, you won't get to Faversham much before nightfall now.
Oh, dear, that's no good. I don't want to be looking for somewhere to stay in the dark.
Well, then, why don't you camp here for the night?
Could I?
Yes. Often get people camping here. You can run into the field and turn your horse loose. It's a shilling a night.
Good idea. Thank you. It'll also give me a breath of sea air.
If you want something to eat or drink, you can always get the ferry across to the island. There's a nice little inn there.
Oh, thank you.
And so there was. Later that evening, Mr. Finchley found himself in the parlour of the inn, which was filled with round applewood tables, polished Windsor chairs, and decorated with burnished copper and old horse brasses. Over a game of darts, Mr. Finchley made the acquaintance of an old sea captain, and they exchanged views on the joys of the open road and the open sea. The captain promised to take Finchley for a sail in his half-decker the following day.
Well, do you like it then?
Well, it's very pleasant, I think.
You don't sound too sure.
Oh, yes, I'm enjoying it, I think. Although, it is a bit choppy today, isn't it?
Oh, this is nothing. Just a little bit of swell, that's all. Look at it. Every second the colours change, every hour the mood differs. Come out here for a holiday and you have to behave yourself. You have to do as the sea says, or it's so much the worse for you.
What's it saying now? And what sort of mood is it in?
Ah, oh, it's in a nice mellow mood, and it's saying, relax, enjoy yourself.
Righto.
I say, look over there. See that headland jutting out there?
Oh, yes.
That's South End. We're in the mouth of the Thames. For hundreds of years, ships have sailed from every part of the globe towards London. Roman galleys, Viking longboats, whalers, colliers, coasters, liners, tenders, cruisers, freighters.
And little sailboats like us.
Yes, that's true. Doesn't it make you feel proud to be part of our great seafaring nation?
Yes, I suppose it does. Raleigh, Frobisher, Drake, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, not everyone has salt in their veins. I have to say, I'm a bit of a landlubber.
Nonsense. We've all got a grain of salt in our veins. It's just what we're used to. That's why I chose to live on a barge.
Oh, I don't think it'd suit me or my wife. Although it would seem something would adventure to my son, Robert. No, I'm looking for a house for all of us.
Well, what about the caravan, then?
Oh, well, that gives me somewhere to live while I'm looking for somewhere to live.
I still say you should buy a boat. Give me the sea every time. You won't find any dust out here or noisy traffic. And there's nothing like being the master of your own craft.
Yes, I can see that has a certain appeal.
Well, then, now, why don't you take the rudder for a while?
Oh, goodness, no. I don't think that's a good idea. I took a wrong turning in the caravan. Heaven knows what I might do in a boat. We'd probably end up shipwrecked. Besides, I do think I ought to be getting back. I have to see a house in Faversham today.
In that case, you can take the rudder and turn her for home.
Oh, I don't know.
Go on, give it a try. There's nothing to it.
Oh, well, all right, but don't go too fast.
Oh, well, that's up to the wind. Easy does it now. Yep. Turn about. Mind your head on the boom.
Boom.
Oh, that's it now. All you have to do is steer. Come on then, Mr. Finchley. Take us home.
Oh, well. Full steam ahead, so to speak.
I'll take over now. It's a bit tricky bringing her into the shore.
By all means. You know, I quite enjoyed that. The only other ship I've ever handled was a paddle boat on the boating lake at Eastbourne.
I'll drop you on the other side, and then you can just walk up the back to your caravan.
Oh, thank you.
If you're going back to Faversham today, you might be kind enough to give me a lift. I want to do some shopping.
Of course, I'd be delighted to.
Oh, I'll just see to the boat, and then I'll be over in a few minutes. Mine, how you go.
Thanks, Captain. I'll see you later then.
Righto.
Mr. Finchley then climbed up the embankment to the field in which stood his caravan. He was about to call to church warden when he saw a man pushing at the door and trying to open the lock by throwing his weight against it. Finchley charged down the slope, jumped the small ditch, and began to run across the field towards the caravan. He was not a good runner. His years and girth were against him, but he surprised himself at the speed with which he covered the ground.
Hey!
He was angry. Very, very angry.
Hey, you! What do you think you're doing? Leave that door alone!
What? What door? Never touched it. Get off me! Let go of my tie! You're choking me! Now look what you've done. That was my best tie. American, that was. You've ruined it. Right, if that's the way you want it... I can play dirty too. Have a face full of this. Oh. You did half look funny with a mouth full of turf.
Think it's funny, do you?
Yeah.
I'll show you something amusing. Now, where's my horsewhip?
What? Oh, no, you wouldn't.
Oh, yes, I would.
I'm off.
Come back here.
Now, wait.
Stop, I say.
Lightly.
I have the police on you. Bastard motorbikes. No point in chasing him. I've only got one horsepower. No offence, church warden. Oh dear, I feel rather shaken. I think I'd better sit down.
Hello, Finchley. You don't look very well. What have you been eating?
Earth.
Huh?
Man threw a clod of turf at me. He was breaking into my caravan. I tried to stop him. He got away, I'm afraid.
That's a shame. It's a pity I didn't arrive sooner. Are you all right?
I think so. I shall probably have a few bruises, but my pride's been hurt more. I shall feel better when I've had a good mouthwash.
Was he a burglar?
Well, he must have been. Although this isn't the only time that someone's taken interest in me. First of all, there was a private detective acting for a mysterious client in London. Then there was another chap snooping around, and now this. But why?
Perhaps it's the caravan.
What?
You say you bought it in London. Maybe it's something to do with the previous owner.
How could it be?
Now, what you should do is to keep your eyes skinned and never leave the caravan unlocked when you go away from it. You can't do more, and I shouldn't spoil your trip by worrying.
I won't. But I hope I meet the gentleman who threw that turf at me. Because if I do, it'll be my turn to give him a mouthful.
Finchley dropped the captain in Faversham, saw a house that he didn't like, and journeyed on. The afternoon of the next day, he reached Canterbury. Finchley awoke to a very hot morning, and having breakfasted, went to collect some milk from a nearby farm. His attention was drawn to the noise of a tractor pulling a hay loader. As it moved along, two men worked busily with their forks, settling the hay into a cart and spreading it. Finchley was leaning on the gate watching them when he was approached by a man coming down the track from the farm.
Good morning.
Good morning. You look busy out there.
Yeah, that's right. Gotta make the most of this fine spell. Are you from that caravan out the road there?
Yes, that's mine. I'm Edgar Finchley.
Oh, and how do you do? Tom Greavy. This is my farm. Listen, we're short-handed. Could give you a job here for a couple of days if you want.
Oh, well, I am...
Can you use a hay fork?
I never have done. You see, there was never any need to at Sprake and Bardwell. Solicitors, you know.
Well, you can soon learn. You have to be careful. You stick it into anyone, you buy a pint all round. What do you say? I could do with the help. And I'll pay you fair.
Well, I suppose I could. I don't seem to have anything much to do today. When would I have to start?
Right now.
Oh.
Hey, Harry! Here's another hand for you.
Here you are.
Better keep out of his way for a while. He's not used to a hay fork. Right, Finchley. Up on the rick you go.
Right. Oh, I see. Right up here. Well, perhaps I should have mentioned this before, but I'm not awfully good at heights.
Well, it's going to get higher as you go along. Don't worry. You'll be all right.
Yes. Oh, there we are. Now, what do I do?
Here's your fork. Just pitch the hay back to Harry behind you.
Right, well, here goes. Is this about right?
Oh, dear.
Oh, no, is that all you can manage? You need to get a better forkful than that. We'll be here all summer.
It's more difficult than it looks. I think I'd better roll my sleeves up.
All that day, Finchley worked like a Hercules. He worked with his hands, with his shoulders, with his legs and with his body. His arms ached, and the handkerchief, which he'd knotted over his head, was wet with perspiration. And gradually, little blisters grew on the palms of his hands. But he stuck to the task and drew strength from a recurring sentence which the mowing machine seemed to beat out and which he repeated to himself throughout the ordeal.
The dignity of labour, the dignity of labour, the dignity of labour.
Fortunately for Mr. Finchley, the dignity of labour came to an end at 6:30.
Ah, thanks, lads. That was a good day's work.
Here you are, Tom.
Congratulations, Finchley. You did very well. Townsfolk think haymaking's a jolly affair of riding on wagons and tossing forkfuls of hay about lightly. Now you know what it's really like.
Well, to go on my honest opinion, I think it's damned hard work.
So it is. But it's good work. Do you think you can manage another day tomorrow? Well, there's that field ready up behind the house. Oh, the second day is nothing like as bad as the first.
Well, are you sure? Well, if I can still move any of my muscles tomorrow, I'll join you.
Splendid. I'll tell you what. If you care to come up to the house about an hour's time, there'll be some supper.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that'll be most welcome. This jolly business of haymaking gives one a bit of an appetite.
When Mr. Finchley awoke the next morning, it was raining. There would be no more haymaking that day, and so he was paid off by Tom Greavy at the rate of 9 pence an hour, wages which Mr. Finchley felt to be extremely hard-earned. Farewells were bid, and soon Finchley was on the road to Ashford, sitting on the driving seat, reins loose in his hands, pipe going, and his coat collar turned up against the squalls of light rain. Suddenly, a car swooped by him like an enormous projectile and was gone, leaving a haze of high-flung spray after it. Churchwarden fidgeted, and Finchley cursed quietly before hearing a warning cry and a beat of pounding hooves. Finchley looked behind him and could scarcely believe his own eyes. Hurtling down the hill towards him was another caravan. A caravan very much like his own, and painted an identical canary yellow.
Look out! I can't stop! Everybody out of the way!
The horse was stretched out in a wild gallop. A man crouched on the driving seat, and the whole caravan swayed, rocked, and bounced alarmingly.
Help! Somebody do something!
The caravan flashed by Finchley like a covered wagon being chased by Red Indian braves.
Get out of the way! I'm out of control!
At every moment, Finchley expected to see the caravan overturn and crash to destruction. Miraculously, it survived. Its salvation being a long stretch of straight road rising to a bridge which finally slowed the caravan up. It came to a halt on the far side of the bridge.
No! Whoa! You all right?
Yes,
I think so. Oh, did you see the swine in the car? I've never in all my life seen...
Mr. Finchley, it's you.
What a surprise.
What a scream.
Well, I never.
Fancy running into you.
Yes, well, you very nearly did.
Did that white car pass you?
Yes, he did. And he was going much too fast.
Fast? He must have been a maniac. Came swooshing under my horse's nose. Swoosh! Next thing I know, we're off and running like a horse in the Derby. I thought my last hour had come. Oh, I could just see the headlines. Shocking caravan fatality in Kent.
Oh, thank goodness you're all right. But what are you doing with a caravan?
Oh, isn't she a beauty? You did it, you know. Yes, it was meeting you that put me onto it. I never thought about caravans until I met you that morning. And there was the caravan, looking like a fairy theme, ready to spirit you away to all sorts of places and adventures.
Yeah.
So I decided I just had to have one.
I didn't realise quite what I'd started.
I wanted her to look as much like yours as possible. It was a silly sort of feeling, really. You seemed so happy. I felt if I wanted to have the same happiness, I should have to have a caravan like yours. Well, it was brown and green when I bought it, but I had it repainted in your colours.
So I see. It's almost identical. And how do you like caravanning?
Oh, fine. Except for the cooking.
Oh?
Well, I'm not much of a hand at cooking. It's wonderful what you can get out of a tin these days. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I like this life. It gives me something to do, plenty of people to talk to. Most days I scarcely do more than 10 miles. And I'm working.
Working? What do you mean? You mean you do odd jobs on the road? You don't do haymaking, do you?
No, no. But look at my sign.
Oh. Horace Blaine, travelling barber, Modern Frost. Ah, yes, your old profession.
That's right. Any village I come to where there isn't a barber shop, I sat up on the green or somewhere handy for the day. I turn the living room into a salon and away I go. All day long I have work and conversation. Schoolboys, farm hands, postmen, you'd be surprised. You know, I've taken 10 shillings in a day.
Good for you. Look, why don't we have lunch together?
Oh, yes. I'll see what tins I've got left.
No. I think it's time you had some fresh food. Leave it to me.
It'll be a welcome relief from corned beef and baked beans. And afterwards, you can join me for a pipe of tobacco.
Perfect.
Perhaps you can give me some advice on caravanning. You are an old hand, after all.
Well, compared to you, I suppose I am. I'm only too happy to give you the benefit of my experience.
I'm very pleased we met up again, Finchley.
So am I. I'm quite tempted to suggest we join forces and travel together.
Ah.
But then, I don't think that would be quite right.
No.
Not that we don't get on famously, because we do.
Of course we do.
Yeah. The thing is, the joy of caravanning is to be free to go where one wants without studying someone else's wishes.
Quite.
So, after lunch, we'll go our separate ways.
Yes. But I'm sure we'll meet up again.
Oh, yes, and I'm already looking forward to it.
Well, let's hope that when we do, you might need another haircut.
Finchley travelled on towards Wye, feeling very happy. The white vanes of Oast houses signalled to him from the clustered farmhouses as he sat on the driving board, a pipe between his teeth, his shirt front open, his bald head browning under the sun, and his large, cherubic face ready with a smile for all he passed on the road. Finchley did not stay in Wye, but climbed out of it for a few miles to the village where he was to view a house. It was thus, late in the afternoon, when he arrived at Wyatt Place, a long, low, timber-framed red-brick residence set in a small meadow.
Good evening.
Good evening. You've come to look over the house?
Yes, if it's not inconvenient.
Not at all, sir. Follow me.
Thank you. Do you live here all alone?
I do, sir. I'm Mrs. Maberly, the caretaker. I was just going to have a cup of tea. Would you like one?
Well, thank you.
Come along, then. Kettle's just boiled. I trust you don't mind sitting in my kitchen.
Oh, not at all.
I always think the kitchen should be the homeliest room of the house. Warm, comfortable and cosy, like an old pair of slippers. What a splendid dresser. Is it included in the price?
I wouldn't know. You'd have to talk to the owners. Sit down, sir, and make yourself at home.
Well, I haven't bought the place yet. Still, thank you, Mrs. Mabberley.
Milk and sugar? Please help yourself to one of my cakes.
Thank you.
Oh, delicious. I don't think I've ever tasted such superb cakes.
My boys like them too. Mab's cakes, they used to call them. They've eaten more than I can remember. I hope you like the house, sir. It's a friendly house. It always was. The house you like to come back to.
Is it?
I was here with the family when they first came before the Great War. I've been here ever since. Johnson was the family name. He was a scholarly gentleman, and he came here with his two boys after his wife died. Vincent and Herbert. I was mother to them. They used to spend a lot of their time in the kitchen.
This house must be full of memories for you then, Mrs. Mabberley.
Yes, sir, it is. They do say that the only thing old people have is their memories.
And why do the family live here now?
Oh, they haven't been here since the war, sir. But I see them often enough. Old Mr. Johnson and Vincent. He was here only last night, was Vincent. Sitting in the chair you've got now. Herbert's the only one I don't see. But he'll come one day. It's for him the solicitors want to sell the house. But it's been a long time and nobody's taken it.
I wonder why. So you've been on your own for some time?
Yes. Alone. But not lonely. It's hardly a night when I don't have company. Either old Mr. Johnson or Vincent, and sometimes both of them. Vincent's still the same rascal. Does me good to hear him laugh. There was a time when I thought that the afterlife was a very serious affair, with no time for fun and jokes.
I don't quite follow you.
Oh, Vincent still laughs. He's just the same as when he was alive.
I know this may seem a silly question, but do you mean that Mr. Johnson and Vincent are dead?
Of course, sir. Vincent was killed in the Great War in 1915.
Oh.
He came to see me two nights after he was killed. His father died within a month of receiving the telegram from the War Office. Very soon after that, they started to come together. I never know when they're coming, except that it's always at night.
Yes. That is the time that these, things start to happen.
There they'll be, sitting in their chairs, calling to me to make tea and cakes.
You can't blame them for coming back for your cakes.
Old Mr. Johnson grumbles sometimes about the way the garden's being kept. Blames Herbert.
Now, let me see. He's the one who's still alive.
Am I upsetting you with this talk, sir?
It's strange, but, you know, it doesn't upset me.
Oh?
No, I don't disbelieve what you say, Mrs. Mabberley. But until a person has actually had such an experience himself, one can't help having a little doubt. You make it all sound so natural.
It is natural, sir. Death is nothing unnatural, and after death is no more mysterious than before birth. I mean, I like being alive, sir, but when I die, I shall have another life, different set of pleasures and pains.
Do you tell many people about this house and the Johnsons?
Oh, yes, everyone. I think it's only fair. Some people might not like to move into a house that is already occupied.
So that's why the house remains unsold.
Possibly.
Yes. Now I understand why. Well, I'm not sure I want to share my kitchen with Mr. Johnson and Vincent, whose chair I believe I'm sitting in now.
Then you won't be taking the place?
No. I don't feel that I would ever be quite comfortable in this house.
Why not?
Well, because I don't think it would ever be my house. Besides, I wouldn't want to be the one to move you from your home of many years.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Finchley. How very thoughtful of you. So, I suppose this means that your search for a house continues.
Yes, I suppose it does.
Indeed it does, Mr. Finchley. Indeed it does. In episode 4 of Mr. Finchley Takes the Road by Victor Canning, Richard Griffiths played the part of Mr. Finchley, John Bird was Horace Blaine, Clive Swift the captain, Albert Welling, Tom Greavy, Oriel Smith, Mrs. Mabberley, Richard Rydings, Duffy, and the narrator was James Villars. Mr. Finchley Takes the Road was adapted for radio by Andy and Eric Merriman. The producer was Gareth Edwards.